So we'll have a 45-minute discussion on second order, which will be led by Adam Pound. So I will just hand things over right to him. Adam, please take it away.
So there's a few science topics. But first, I wanted to mention that our old friend Jordan Moxon is leaving the field, for anyone who doesn't know. And it's a crying shame that he's done so much work behind the scenes on second order stuff, and we have not published a single paper. So we have something like 6 papers in preparation. Hopefully we can get some of those done before he leaves. But I would just like to wish him well, and I think we should all wish him well, because he's been a great contributor to Capra for years. Okay, of course everyone's muted, so just imagine that everyone was wishing Jordan well. Okay, science-wise, but kind of sociologically-wise, I think a big question we got to start asking ourselves is it possible for us to get post-adiabatic waveforms covering the parameter space in 12 years? So of course, every time we put in a grant application, we say, obviously it's possible if you give us this money. And maybe that's true. If they gave us enough money, they need to start giving us more money. But I think we need to realistically take stock of, are we going to do this? Are we going to get this done? And as a community, if we think it's essential to get it done, which I think probably most of us agree it is, we need a bigger community effort. So, you know, of course I listed like 100 people on my talk, people working on these things. Lots of those people are students who are about to leave in a year. So whoever's got some money, please hire all those students, because they will all be on the market for postdocs. Okay, so I would like to get people's thoughts on really what they're thinking about long-term goals. Are we going to be able to do this? But I think there's actually 2 kind of avenues to think about here, and will kind of determine what to prioritize. So we always talk about EMRIs, and that's always been the goal. But in a certain sense, EMRIs are much harder than everything else. And I think it's clear that we can make solid contributions, definitely for EMRIs, but probably even for, you know, 1 to 50, 1 to 20 mass ratios. But then I think the priority is different. So for EMRIs, I think really the goal for doing second order calculations is to do the minimum accuracy we can possibly get away with and attack the parameter space as broadly as we can. And so in CellForce, we're not used to doing that kind of thing. In CellForce and Capra, we always, you know, Abhay Shah comes along and reports that he's got 3,000 digits of precision. And we think, wow, that's amazing. But no, let's aim for 2 or 3 digits of precision. Because we don't need second order stuff nearly as accurately as we need first order fluxes, for example. And in the second order calculations we've been doing, you know, we keep finding like, oh, we got a 10 to the minus 4 level disagreement between something. Is that a real thing? Let's spend 6 months figuring it out. And one question is, do we care? Who cares? But we do care if we're trying to improve comparable mass binaries, I think. Because, you know, if we have a loud signal, you know, we need every model there to be really, really accurate. And so anything we can do to improve models there is a good idea. And we always show these plots showing, oh, we've got these amazing agreement. You know, 1% error, 1% disagreement from numerical relativity at mass ratio one or something. But that's, you know, that's not good enough for a loud signal. So I'm just putting this out there. What are people's thoughts on this? I don't know how to unmute people. Is someone in charge of this?
I can help. You can also do it as well.
Okay, but if you click on incompetence, which is why we don't have second order.
Okay, I'm asking Martin to unmute now. I feel you can do second order, but you can't unmute on Zoom.
I can't do second order, and I can't unmute.
Okay, Martin is now unmute.
So on the topic of requiring much more accuracy for comparable masses, I think it's probably the other way around in the sense that for comparable masses, the higher order terms that we don't calculate are going to be much more relevant compared to the precision of our lower order terms. So while essentially we need the fluxes to the essentially the mass ratio accuracy.
So I'm not sure about that, because we can use our results to calibrate EOB, for example. And if it's, you know, if it's mass ratio 1 to 50, NR is going to be struggling. So I think anything we can do to help is good. But also, Niels had some backup slides that I'm going to ask him to share, showing, among other things, that, you know, there's the possibility that we can read off the next term, the second post-adiabatic term, by doing exactly what you did. But now we have, if we have the first post-adiabatic term, we can subtract that off and fit the residual.
Oh, yes, that sounds plausible.
And one thing to emphasize here is that, okay, I put this number 10 to the 14 integrals, probably won't have time to get to that bullet point, but one thing to emphasize is that, yeah, there's very expensive calculations that we do, and Barry tells me that something that he set running last December is still running, but it's quite different than numerical relativity, because numerical relativity, you know, you set, say you want a really long inspiral, you pick one mass ratio, you let it run for 6 months, whereas we run for 6 months and then we can get every mass ratio in spirals for any number of orbits in a second. Okay, how do I let Niels... What the hell am I doing here?
Okay, so Niels has to be made a co-host, so I've just sent that request through, so that'll take a second. Excellent. In the minute I can unmute Aaron Zimmerman, because I can see... Niels is now a co-host. Okay.
Aaron, you can go ahead if you...
Yeah, just a quick question on the 10 and 14 integrals. So in to put some context, if people want to do a very high-resolution neutron star merger with magnetohydrodynamics, maybe that takes 10 million CPU hours or more on a supercomputer, right? So, if, you know, there's a difference here between like how much computing time does it really take to solve this problem once and for all, and do you have it over the next decade, versus, okay, right now the wall clock time is terrible for what Barry is doing. But this is a major computing effort, right? We're gonna eventually put these on the biggest supercomputers to the tune of tens of millions of CPU hours. Is that sufficient? Are we really looking at another order of magnitude or two?
Yeah, let's discuss that if we have time. But first, Niels has got exciting things to show. More exciting things. More exciting than what he already showed.
Preliminary things, perhaps. Adam, you have to stop sharing so I can...
Oh, God damn it. Stop share. All right. Done.
Okay. So this is one of my slides that I showed earlier today. It was pretty rushed this morning, lots of things to get through. But this was the scaling with the mass ratio for the 2, 2, and the 3, 3 modes, comparing numerical relativity to our self-force results for first order and second order. And the point I was making here is you could subtract off first order and see the a residual, which scaled in the way you expected, and likewise once you subtract second order. So it's a bit noisy in the 2-2 mode, and that's partially due to these oscillations that I have to kind of smooth out in the numerical relativity simulation. Also, just because the first order result accounts for so much of the flux, that by the time you subtract the second order result, can't be completely sure of this, but we're sort of creeping into what might be the numerical relativity error, or at least my understanding of it. But if, for instance, in the 3-3 mode, it is much clearer, and you can kind of fit this result, and you can fit it at lots of different values. Or X. I've had a quick go at that. And so you can extract what would be effectively the third order flux by these comparisons. And as an example, I just did it at a few points. So here's a plot I showed earlier. This is the Q10. This is the 3-3 mode. And as we saw, the bare self-force result disagrees with the numerical relativity result a little bit. I discussed this sort of resummation that seems to work surprisingly well. We can discuss that as well. But by fitting it, just basically taking the plots that I just showed and fitting for the third order flux, I get these bright green points. And when I add them on, then I get, again, agreement with numerical relativity. So that's another thing that we certainly can do reasonably well. And this is really just a first pass. You know, I'm not an expert in the NR data. I'm just doing the best we can with that. I'm sure there could be a lot of improvement here. So that is one option for getting even closer to comparable mass. I don't know, Aaron, if your hand is still up from before, or you wanted to comment, and Bernard as well.
My hand is still up from before, but I found that if I mute myself, I lose the power to talk ever again. So anyway, I'll put my hand down and I'll mute.
Okay, you've only plotted a few bright green points here, and presumably they would go all the way across to the far right.
Yeah, that's partially because I did this the day before the talk, so this hasn't been something we've looked at a lot. They would, of course. This, as I did briefly mention, this plot is missing some of the slow time derivative terms that Leanne talked about. So there is a divergence here as we're approaching the transition to plunge. I kind of stay away from this region, but I would expect to be able to fit it out here as well. Again, I have to smooth out the NR simulations a little bit to get this to work, and it's a little bit trickier in this regime.
But the transition zone has entirely different, time scaling and so on. So you wouldn't expect these plots plots like the ones you on the previous slide to inform how to extend this to x between about 0.15 or something.
Yeah, we'll have to do something else to attach the transition.
Something transitional, but yeah. Okay.
It's possible we may be able to then extract higher order terms as well, but we'll have to see once we've done added the transition basically.
So, yeah, what I really want to know would be if we did some extrapolation like you suggested, how much better would we be doing essentially for free? I mean, you showed things that match on this slide, but if we look at the differences, are they really of the same order as the differences that you're showing? Between the full numerical relativity and the green dots, are they the same order as the differences that curve came from? Or are they bigger? Because here it's fitted.
I'm not quite sure I understand the question, sorry.
Well, in the previous slide, you show differences that are around 10 to the minus 8 or 10 to the minus 9.
Yeah. I should explain those dots. I fitted these lines by eye and put those dots on. That's how preliminary this work is. Is the error, so I have no sense of the errors in any of those fits at this stage.
But you're using those fits to correct things between 10 to the minus 8 and 10 to the minus 9 on this, which is where this curve occurs. Mm-hmm. So when you go back to the slide where the green dots are, and you look at the difference between the green dots and the actual numerical relativity data, is it still of that order, or which I'd expect it would be? Mm-hmm. And if
you I haven't looked carefully what the residual is between the green dots and numerical relativity results.
Yeah. Okay.
That's certainly for future work. I think we'd be very happy to understand better the numerical relativity data. We're still very new to that. So if there are people here who do understand these data, that data well, we'd love to work with them, I think, in the going forward for these sorts of comparisons.
Okay. Niels, I have a naive question here. So when you do this cell force calculation, flux calculation, presumably you're expanding in the mass ratio Q, right? So, but here, I assume this nu is the symmetric mass ratio. So if you change from Q to this nu, do you get contribution from the first order cell force to the second order? So first order flux to the second order? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, you do get a contribution from the first order in Q to the second order with respect to nu. Yep, you do. That happens.
Oh. Okay, cool, thanks.
Yes, I didn't give explicitly the re-expansion, but yes, that does happen.
So yeah, if you don't use the expansion in nu, if you use Q, it it's total garbage.
Adam, do you wanna pick people to their hands up?
Bernard, yeah, still, is that a remaining hand or is that a new hand? That's gone.
People can now unmute themselves as well, so you don't have to worry about that anymore.
Okay, excellent. Okay, Leor.
I'm not sure if it was first.
I'm just reading from top to bottom. I don't know.
All right. Okay, it's a quick comment, just a thought on the transition. So one thing one can do is to match a numerical relativity bit at the end, in much the same way that people match PN to NR today, but only at the end. And that saves, of course, all the problem of bad scaling with mass ratio with respect to more orbital cycle. But if you were to only do NR over four, the last four orbits, much, much easier and can be done also with very high mass, very extreme mass ratios, I suppose. So somebody will need to work out how to do a matching like that between SF and NR in the last four orbits. But that's maybe a possible strategy.
I think this was along the lines of what Alex Lechek has been pushing for years. Use self-force to get further into the N-spiral than you would with post-Newtonian and then switch to numerical relativity.
Yeah, that makes sense. That solves the half of the problem of scaling.
But I think
the one half that Mackey isn't solving it. Sorry.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, that's an excellent point. But I think it shouldn't be too hard for us to go into the transition. To use the very, very similar method, frequency domain, just with a different slow time scale.
You would need to match the phases very carefully and so on. So it's not an easy problem.
Should be pretty easy, I think.
Yeah, I'm thinking beyond circular orbit.
I only know how to do things, how to do the transition to the extent that I know how to do it. I only know how to do it for circular orbits. Mm-hmm. Zach.
Have you all tried, I guess, doing this whole, you subtracting the second order results from numerical relativity to fit for the residuals for higher order terms? Have you tried doing that with the first order or is it just so wildly different that you get kind of garbage residuals? Or would you be able to fit and get something to compare to your second order results?
That's basically what's there.
Yeah, I mean, well, here I'm just subtracting the known self-force orders. I did have a look at this and taking this result, subtracting the first order to get the, to see how well I could fit the second order. It wasn't very good. But again, these are super preliminary comparisons. And I know people like, obviously, Martin was doing effectively doing this with the waveform with Harold. And so maybe this is an option to look up other types of orbits.
I guess, I was just wondering if the concern is that these second order calculations are so expensive. Can you just get away with doing this type of fitting just with the first order self-force and use kind of the small limited space, you know, parts of the parameter space that we can do these second order calculations, just verify that that fitting's even, you know, halfway decent.
So yeah, that idea is one of the bullet points later on my list. And that seems like a very good idea. Although what we heard, when was that, yesterday, made it seem like it might be quite hard to do for non-circular orbits. Sergei?
It's me. So coming from numerical relativity, and when I've been trying to analyze to compare with the redshift, my concern is like with what we use as the x-axis, because we're used to use the orbital frequency, but I don't know if the orbital frequency that we can get from our numerical relativity simulations necessarily have to match the orbital frequency that you're using here. So I've seen like in some other previous analysis for the binding energy, I think Letiek used the angular momentum. So they have curves of E versus the angular momentum. I wonder if, you know, that could be possible at some point to calculate the angular momentum and then have those curves that look more invariant to me.
So yeah, a couple of things there. One thing is that the frequency we're plotting, or the frequency we have on the x-axis now is not the same frequency we had on the x-axis in the binding energy plots. So the one we're using now is read off from the waveform, whereas the one in the binding energy was directly from the orbit. Angular momentum. Yeah, we thought we were going to calculate the angular momentum a long time ago. Haven't done it yet. We had such a headache with the binding energy that we...
Exactly, yeah. It's so tedious with the binding energy.
Calculation again.
But it is on the to-do list. Although maybe there, we're happy to have collaborators who might be interested as well. We can give you the data. Yeah. Someone wants to look at that in detail.
Leo, is your hands?
Yes, I have a quick. So, what prevents you actually from comparing waveforms now?
We don't have the waveforms. The trouble.
But so what prevents you from producing ones quite easily now?
We don't have the phase evolution. We only have its time derivative.
So the time derivative. What do you mean? You have the second order perturbation.
So I mentioned that Barry's been running something for 6 months. So that data would go into that calculation. I mean, you can see not on these plots, but Niels, if you can show the plots as a function of frequency or X. We don't have enough points on those plots to actually do an evolution. We have a lot more points than or what we have shown there, but not with all the data calculated yet. But also,
I think we could interpolate those points, Adam, but we don't have a flux balance law or
a local self-force.
Local self-force, yes. We only have the asymptotic. We have the retarded metric perturbation.
We have the local self-force. It just wasn't behaving properly. So we already generated waveforms a year ago. They were just totally wrong. And we thought, hey, flux is working really well. Let's focus on that.
But you don't need more than the asymptotic second order perturbation for this, which you...
We don't have a balance law. We don't have a balance law.
But you're solving the second order field equations.
Yeah.
So you have the second order perturbation, retarded perturbation, presumably.
And the residual field of the particle.
Right. No, but now you have the asymptotic field, and you can calculate the waveform.
No. That's not how the two timescale expansion works. We have amplitudes.
Right, yes.
Time derivatives of the phases.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The one phases.
We need to integrate. And you just need a final sampling then, maybe.
No, I mean, our self-force was not behaving properly. We spent, a week on it and it didn't work, and we focused on this instead.
Mm-hmm. We were definitely missing terms at the time
at that point, that we now have. We haven't,
so some of the slow time terms were still not in the calculation. Everything is now principle complete. We just haven't had a chance to return to the local self-force.
This was all so beautiful. We got so excited about this that, why put effort into something that wasn't immediately working, whereas this did immediately work.
Makes sense from project management point of view. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, now that you finally managed to, get all these exciting results, I want to go back to the project.
You are welcome back. We need everybody we can get.
Thank you. Well, I have another question if no one else is asking. Just a quick one to Nils. So these yellow points that you put there earlier, they are results. Nils, can you hear me? Okay.
Which yellow points do you mean?
Oh, those you put before that come from much. They were green, not yellow. Sorry. Yep. So they just come from matching for the third order, matching against the numerical relativity result. So.
Yeah, I will be absolutely clear. I looked at this plot. I fitted that line by eye, took the coefficient, and then put it on the other plot.
Put it back. No, but there shouldn't be a surprise that they match even better because they are fitted against the very numerical results. Okay.
Right. Yeah, no, you'd have to do this properly, and then you'd have to look at it across the, fit those terms and see how it varies across the function of Q to really make some meaningful statement. But
the green
just highlight it, it could be done.
And the green points would have to agree better with the blue ones because they are better fit to it, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we would expect this.
Okay. Thanks.
Martin.
So, getting back to something you said earlier, you said you thought you didn't have enough points in X to do evolutions. How many points do you think you need?
As always, we're doing more than we need, I think.
I was trying to get back to your point from the first slide. I would expect an interpolation over maybe 10 or 12 points should give you enough interpolation accuracy. Here, right?
It is a pretty smooth curve. Yeah.
Especially if you do some spectral interpolation or something.
I think the number of points we had, we decided wasn't enough, but we're now doing 10 times as many points.
How many points do you have?
I think Barry means we had. When we first looked at it, we only had a few points. this is the current status as of a couple of days ago.
So the points on the right are the new kind of more dense version, and the ones on the left are the less. And yes, on this it looks so bad.
More points just to kind of resolve this, whether it's actually a feature. But this, these can be interpolated. What's here now can be interpolated pretty well.
So yeah, we should be aiming as low as possible whenever possible.
So what is the typical computation time of one of these points?
The most expensive part, well, we can go to my integrals, my 10 to the 14 integrals, to get some idea of what's going on there. Can I share my screen? Yes. Okay. Yeah, so this is where all the expense comes in. Well, we're doing a whole bunch of stupid things that are more expensive than they should be, but this is where the real expense comes in. So the problem is, we need to calculate this second order Einstein tensor, which is made up of products of the first order field. And what we have as numerical input is not the first order field, it's LM modes of the first order field. And so when you try to sum up those modes, you get behavior like this, where it's just going up and up and up and up and never converging. Formally, it is, you know, exponentially convergent as long as you're away from the particle right here, but it's in practice incredibly slow. And to get close enough to the world line that we need to get to cancel singular things, you know, we would need 1,000 modes or something, which is obviously impossible. So what we do instead is this decomposition of the second order Einstein tensor into, I think it's four pieces, but it's basically three pieces. We split up the first order field into a puncture and a residual. And then we have a piece that is puncture times puncture, a piece that's puncture times residual, and a piece that's residual times residual. And we compute the puncture times puncture piece by actually putting in the four-dimensional first-order puncture. So we're using a fourth-order local approximation. And then numerically doing this integral, so numerically integrating over angles. So that is technically by far the slowest part, but it shouldn't be. So I'm not going to say it's the slowest part. That's the part that's still running 6 months later. But there's no reason that we shouldn't be doing it the way we're doing it. So I'm not going to say that's a long-term problem. The reason it's so slow is we're doing that as a two-dimensional integral over two angles. And we know at least one of those we can do analytically, and so we shouldn't be doing it fully numerically. Okay, but that's not the long-term obstacle. The long-term obstacle is we then need to calculate these other two pieces, in particular this puncture times residual piece, from modes, because we don't have the four-dimensional residual fields. We can only get it by taking retarded field modes and then subtracting modes of the puncture. And to get the right answer, you've got to make sure that the modes you're calculating for your puncture are exactly the LM modes of exactly what you're putting in here, exactly the three-dimensional object you're putting in. And because of that, we have to evaluate angular integrals of the three-dimensional puncture to get the individual LM modes. And then the problem is just that there's so many modes. And because we're doing it numerically, we need to do it on a grid of R values around the particle. And then you need to do that for every value of orbital radius that you're looking at. Okay, so here's the 10 to the 14 integrals. So I just said the problem, we need to get these modes. So these ones we're not doing as two-dimensional numerical integrals. So we've already done the smart thing of doing one of the integrals analytically. Well, I say we, Barry's done it. Okay, so here's an actual calculation. This is real time. This is not an estimate. This is what really happened. So we went over roughly 100 orbital radii. And for each orbital radius, we sampled about 100 radial points around the particle. And then we were looking at L up to 40 or 50, so roughly 50 squared modes. And of course, we've got a tensor, so there's 10 fields. So that is 100 million integrals. So running this, and this is not optimized at all, and you know, Barry will say, of course, we can optimize this much more, but the point is we need someone to actually do this. We need people to come in and make this fast and get it done. So that took 2 months, maybe 6 weeks, something like that, continuously running on 400 cores. So that's not nearly as bad as the 6 months that the other thing's been running, but as I said, let's ignore that. So you can get a rough sense. I think it's basically a day per orbital radius, a couple days, something, I can't remember.
So do you actually need 100 orbital radii? Sounds like a lot.
As we were just saying, no, we don't. And we definitely don't need this many radial points. We tried cutting down the number of radial points by a factor of 10, and it was still fine.
Yeah.
Okay, but as you'll see, that's not enough. We need dramatically greater improvement than that. Because now you go to generic inspirals and Kerr. Okay, so I just made up this number of, say we need 10,000 points in the parameter space. This is a number people always say. I don't know where this comes from. Maybe I just made it up. I think Niels made it up. Someone made up this number. Guess that we need 10,000 points in the parameter space.
I think, yeah, that sounds reasonable. Probably at the accuracy we need, we can deal with a little bit less, but not okay. Much.
I guess it depends, actually. That's the kind of thing where we might, you know, be doing more work as data actually comes in, and where do we need more density and higher accuracy? Okay, so then the trouble is you're looking at eccentric inclined orbits. You need to do these integrals over a big region. I'm probably underestimating here, but you need to go over the whole libration region.
Sure, but as long as things aren't highly oscillatory there. Oh, but they probably...
They are, yeah.
Yeah, but they are, because that's exactly the problem doing the fluxes.
Exactly. Okay, so then I made up this number based on a conversation with Niels of about 10 to the 5 modes. I think Martin has given me a similar estimate before. So we need a lot of radial frequency modes. And a fair number of polar frequency modes. Okay, and we got 10 fields, and we got a typo in LaTeX, but that's 10 to the 14 integrals. So if you say 2 months on 400 cores to do this, that's 2 million months on 400 cores to do this, which is a long time. So that's probably longer than we want to be running for.
Well, if we just run it on 4 million cores.
That's true. That is true.
Well, 400 million cores.
Then we only need 2 months.
I mean, it's worth saying there's definitely a fair amount of optimization to be had on these. So factors of 1,000 are easy to come by, I suspect. But it's still a lot of computation. That is the point.
It's a lot of computation.
With manpower to do it. Yeah.
Is it mostly mathematical?
the problem is that we need people to, and it's not necessarily glamorous work to optimize these things and automate things. I mean, at the moment, it's embarrassing, the process we go through to do this calculation. It involves a series of emails between all of us, with data files passed around. And
Slowest, I think, ever.
Yeah. So I think we need that, a level of automation. And then, I mean, I guess 400,000 cores isn't unrealistic in modern computing time days.
I think that number exactly, someone quoted the proof of principle numerical relativity next generation people have done. So maybe it's reasonable, but the point is we need people to actually be working on this. And I can tell you, I've spent the last week marking and I couldn't do this and my life depended on it anyway.
Is this mostly Mathematica?
That
combination. Two slowest,
this is two, Mathematica, yeah.
The two slowest parts are, but they're just straightforward quadrature integrals of expressions that you could convert to any other form you wanted.
We even talked about, is there a possibility just to put this on GPUs? Are they simple enough for GPUs?
I would think so.
Like, I remember when Niels was saying he was flying out to California feeling depressed about just doing adiabatic inspirals because you need so many modes. And then 2 days later, Michael Katz had this thing on a GPU and it was all done.
Yep. It lifted my depression about that. Yeah. So I mean, there is computational tricks that you can get a lot out of some of the stuff as well.
I mean, there are some challenges with these integrals in that for higher L, for example, they become more and more oscillatory. And the integrand is oscillatory, but the integral decreases in magnitude. I think something like that, anyway. So they get harder. And eventually, machine precision might not be enough. But again, I guess these things can be resolved.
Probably a bigger problem is we don't have a formulation that works in Kerr at the moment. So. But we can start running, well, maybe a formulation, but we don't have any codes that run.
If our students are around for another year, I think we can get going. Hopefully. George has had his hand up.
Yeah, naive question alert again. How much of the, getting back to that question, how many of these orbits do you have to do to, I mean, can you take the last part qualitatively and say, given these initial conditions, the end result might look like this?
It depends what we're modeling, but in general, we need... Okay, so we've been saying we need low precision, but that's because we're calculating something very small. But in general, you need very high accuracy for parts of the calculation, at least.
And are there regimes where you'd have stability up to a point, and then you'd have to do a numerical scheme for those areas where it becomes more unstable, where you could do a more analytical approach to the well-behaved parts?
It's all pretty well behaved. Our particular formalism breaks down near the innermost stable circular orbit, and a generic orbit for a generic inspiral, our particular formalism would break down near a resonance, and then you need to do special things. But I think there is a lot of room to use analytical post-Newtonian inputs with some resummations, because we don't need that much accuracy, so.
I've been thinking about getting a 4800 core Tesla card for my computer here, and now I'm beginning to think that I might just do that.
It's a good investment.
Yeah, well, it's all out of pocket. I run my own shop.
Not such a good investment.
Well, I do a lot of numerical modeling of thunderstorms and things like that too. So, yeah. I mean, that wouldn't hurt for that either. And I do a lot of Mathematica work with the GPU stuff. So, I mean, my claim to fame is I'm a Mathematica developer.
Oh, really? You could help us.
If you want, yeah. I for 20 years, I was one of 20 accredited Mathematica consultants in the world.
Wow.
So, right. Yeah, if you, I'll just type my email in if you want to get in touch with me.
Yeah, Barry is the resident Mathematica expert amongst the second order people.
I mean, at the Midwest Relativity meeting last year, I did a full blown general relativistic solution. I basically did the stress energy tensor for a gravitational fluid, viscous fluid, in all its gory details using X-ACT.
Hmm.
That was pretty hideous. But let me know if you want assistance with that. I certainly am available.
Yeah, I think Barry is the man to discuss that with you.
Yeah, I think more broadly, I mean we would be quite happy to open up bits of our codes for people to play around with. I mean, for example, these integrals is just one Mathematica notebook that basically just does n integrate. That's it.
Now,
it's a very complicated expression.
Now, have you been using the built-in compiler, or are you massaging the different methods that you're using?
Some experimentation with that, yeah. But I'm sure there's scope to improve it. Sure. There is also, I think these integrals could be done. They are elliptic integrals. So someone with the right skills could massage them into just elliptic integral functions, which might be faster to evaluate than numeric integration.
Sure. Once you have an interpolating function, it becomes a lot simpler. So. Okay, well, thanks.
Okay. Let me.
Okay, may I chime in? It seems we're running out of time, so I would like to, unfortunately, call the day to a close. Call this a day, but please feel free to continue the discussion on Slack. Thanks very much, Adam, and everyone who contributed to the discussion session, and thanks everyone for this wonderful third conference day. See you all tomorrow morning.